Hello, welcome to Supplier Diversity Red Tape. This podcast is titled The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, and Sometimes Lucky of Supplier Diversity. I'm Vanessa Penoyer and I'm president of GoToGirl. This show will expose the red tape that diverse business owners such as women, minority, veterans, and the LGBTQ plus communities, all the things that they face while trying to add value and grow their business through certification and navigating these public and private entities. We'll be interviewing supplier diversity managers and procurement officers to understand how to get access to opportunities, how to do business with blank. We'll also be hearing from diverse business owners on whether or not it is all really worth the effort. So get ready for some controversy and some clarity. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Navigating Supplier Diversity. I am your host, Vanessa Penoyer, president of GoToGirl. And today I am super excited to have my first male guest. And we have Matt Lewis on the call with us. And Matt is one of the nation's leading experts in career transition for members of the military community. He advises veterans on their transition efforts and employers on hiring programs designed to successfully assimilate these valuable talent pools. He is the author of the award-winning and Amazon best-selling HarperCollins book, Mission Transition. It's a practical guide for veterans in career transition and the award-winning Career Press book, Hiring Veterans, practical guide for organizations on how to build programs to successfully assimilate this valuable talent pool. And I am sure that one brief paragraph there is not even the tip of the iceberg of your experience and all of the valuable things that you were doing. So welcome, Matt, to the show, and tell us a little bit about this journey and your mission, because I want to hear about your experience.
Well, first, thanks, Vanessa, for having me here today. I look forward to the conversation. You're right in describing it as a journey. I'll touch briefly on my experience, but I'll kind of quickly pivot to my mission, as it were, at least how my mission has evolved in recent years. So West Point graduate, undergraduate degree, spent my first 5 years on active duty, another 16 in the reserves, all told between the academy and time and duty, 25 years in a uniform of some sort. Left active duty, used graduate school as my transition vehicle, leading to stints in the corporate world, stops along the way at places like Procter & Gamble, General Electric, 18 years at Deloitte, from which I retired a couple years ago, joining PurePost as its president, all told 25 plus years and counting in the corporate space. So, and there's few people that can speak to both sides of what I call the civil military divide with that depth of experience. And to that point, I've pivoted my life's purpose, my life's mission, better part of the past decade, to focus on eliminating that civil military divide. That work has taken on three different efforts. The first two, you saw me point out my books over my shoulder here. Mission Transition is a practical guide to help service members and military spouses realize full employment, optimal career fields when they leave active duty. Lots of reasons why that's important. Lots of reasons why I focused on employment. The other half of the civil divide is addressed by the second book, Hiring Veterans, which just came out in September. This is a practical guide for organizational leaders to build programs to bring on those veterans and military spouses. But even if you're successful with both of those, you still need the talent. There's still what I call a lack of a warm handoff in between your last duty station and the community in which you settle from an employment standpoint. That's where my work at PurePost comes into play, where we match the supply and demand of talent, helping individuals find full employment, optimal career fields based on their underlying competencies and skills, which members of the military community bring with them in spades. So those are kind of the three legs of the stool, as it were, that I'm using to get at this thing I call the civil military divide.
And so you had mentioned years and years and years in the corporate space, and every one of my guests kind of will always mention, like, when you decided to leave the corporate world and start on your own and what that journey's been like. And I shared a little bit about mine before we started recording. So speak a little bit about that.
Sure. So the corporate experience is a bit of a long and winding road. You know, I lived the transition experience, as every service member does. I used, as I said, graduate school as my transition vehicle. And it's a good thing that I took 2 years to, at the time I called it deprogramming, because that's kind of the way I experienced it, to better understand who I was as a person and where my underlying competencies and skills actually fit in the real world. And it's a good thing I did. I approached graduate school with a hypothesis that human resources would be the area, the field in which I wanted to excel, thinking that in the Army, as I was, we lead individuals, and that translates in the real world into human resources. And that's really not the case. I'll spare you that diatribe. What I did learn through the graduate school experience is that my true competencies and skills related more to being with, in a word, being an operator. And so manufacturing operations, logistics, and support efforts that augment those, such as lean manufacturing, Six Sigma, all those kinds of skills, is really where my efforts in the corporate world ended up being. So I started out upon securing my MBA at Procter & Gamble, where I was in purchases, kind of the very beginning of the supply chain. And then evolved from there, jump ship over to General Electric, where I, in the waning days of Jack Welch, secured my black belt at one of their divisions, and then transferred to another division after 9/11 to do full-on manufacturing operations and distribution operations, again, experienced throughout the entirety of the supply chain writ large, and then pivoted to work at Deloitte advising corporate entities on doing just that. Manufacturing, Lean Six Sigma, all of those sorts of operations. My experience in professional services, however, quickly dovetailed into doing M&A and restructuring, initially with the basis of kind of a quality function within an organization, manufacturing operations function within an organization, but then rapidly expanded to the totality of M&A efforts and project management thereof, which I really spent the balance of my time in the firm executing on, to put it simply. So that was it before I jumped and began pursuing my passion and being president of this entity called PeerPost.
What do you think are some of your challenges? Because I think, like in my space, when I'm trying to work with corporations on a supplier diversity program, I find that often companies say, well, talk to the HR person. And an HR professional in an organization is dealing in the workforce and you're doing that. But then there's also this other component of the supply chain and veteran-owned businesses. How is that separate for you in the workforce? Or are you kind of doing both where you're helping transition into corporates as employees and then also with your fellow business owners?
So first, just to provide some context to our viewers, I told my story up front, but in doing that, I kind of wear two different hats, and I'll try to be clear when I'm speaking with which hat on. All of my publishing work and individual advisory work is done under Lewis Advisors, which is a veteran-owned small business. My PeerPost hat, we're a B corporation, so by statute, we have to serve a societal good. For us, it's U.S. veterans. That's a different hat that I wear. So let me speak in answer to your question about the VOSB angle and indirectly what I experienced in my work at PeerPost and trying to sell into organizations. The short answer to your question is you have to network and figure out who the decision maker is who's ultimately going to decide on whether or not your service or product is going to benefit that organization. And at HR, to the extent that they're involved at all, tends to be just a screening tool or a screening device or some administrative check the block, fill out this paperwork sort of entity. You really got to get in with the individuals that are going to be utilizing your product or service and ensure they understand your value proposition and sell them on what you actually bring to the table. That's the long and short of it.
Right. I guess when you're getting a talent pool of fellow veterans, right? What does that process look like? Essentially not as an employment agency, which you're not, So how are you recruiting and educating? What does that process look like to get them to the next side?
Sure. So I'll put on my PurePost hat here. But what we've done, just for context, we spent 5 years creating what is now the world's largest proprietary database of translated competencies and skills. So what? Let me tell you why that matters. What all veterans and military spouses bring to the table in spades are skills and competencies they've earned through their time in uniform, be it downrange, be it in the classroom, be it via the training that they've taken. And what we're able to do with that database is enable you, me, military, civilian, everyone for free, for life, to go onto our platform, create what we call a passport. Think of it as an online profile. In 15 minutes, it'll translate instantly your underlying competencies and skills based on your job history, and then match you to any job opening in the U.S. economy for which you're a fit based on those underlying competencies and skills. Get you a better quality match from the outset. No one else in the economy, no other entity, competing entity, can do that. It gets you as an individual, because of that better quality match, better personal fulfillment, better opportunity to build personal wealth for you and your family, better opportunity for upward mobility in the organization you ultimately land in. For the organization, it saves them time. It helps their retention rates, again, because they're getting a better quality match from the outset. Over time and at scale, it gets them better productivity and competitiveness as well. So it is a win-win all around. And long and short of it, that's what we enable individuals that come onto our platform. Now, we pull them from individuals just coming onto our platform, creating a passport. We also have relationships with any number of veterans service organizations out there that have untold numbers of individual veterans and military spouses that are their clientele, and service them in the same capacity.
So this is a recruiting tool that's combining like your Indeed and Monster and all of the ZipRecruiter platforms with, I want to say, maybe the Strength Finder and your DISC assessments, and really kind of digging deep into the core of what recruitment really is for long term. Is that a good analogy to put out there?
I'd call it just that, an analogy. When you mesh all that together at a high level, that's kind of sort of what we do.
So in doing this, and I've worked with a lot of different talent agencies. Some that do temporary staffing, some that are recruiting from other countries, bringing, manual work in. I've worked with, agencies at different executive levels. And it seems like, it's kind of broken down into, the seasonal temporary space, or it's C-level management training leadership, or it gets into this other thing. So I understand your book and the process of helping organizations understand how to hire, right, veterans. And that's a whole culture piece, because if you haven't been in service, it's really hard to relate to what that experience is. Are there some components of training and an implementation, and what does that look like from a cultural mindset when you approach these organizations on how to hire and what to look for in service members?
Yeah, so truly there's training needed on both sides of the divide. And on my website, both veterans and those aspiring to hire veterans will find a plethora of resources, training courses, video courses, workbooks, you name it. People have given me feedback that they've never seen an author that's given away so much free content on their website. And again, I'm purpose-driven. This is a personal passion project. It's why I'm doing what I'm doing, why I'm part of a purpose-driven business with PurePost as a B Corp, a public benefits corporation. So that's what we do. But to answer your question, so individuals can go on. There's 21 free video courses. There's free workbooks. There's a couple dozen different resources, fully about a quarter of the original book that got cut simply because of word count limits with the publisher. It's all out there for free. And likewise, the second book, there's twice as many resources in support of the second book, Hiring Veterans, on my website as well. Again, all for free for everyone. And, you know, I can drown you in statistics, but the civil military divide, as I call it, the lack of understanding of organizational entities and truly having appreciation, understanding for what veterans and military spouses bring with them has almost never been this wide in the history of our country. In short, it prevents members of the military community from realizing full employment and optimal career fields. And why that's important: one, it leads to suicidality. There's a direct correlation to unemployment, underemployment. You know, I use the analogy of if y'all remember the old Thomas the Train cartoon that you used to have your kids watch, you know, the thing akin to death in that cartoon was not being a useful engine. Full employment and optimal career field is being a useful engine. And that's what we need to aspire to have our service members, military spouses realize. The productivity gains, and all of this is, you know, again, I'll spout statistics, but all of it is based in academic scientific studies. Organizations that have a diverse, inclusive workforce that includes veterans realize a 22% productivity gain, 13 times higher mean cash flow, 4 times better able to deal with personnel problems, 3 times better able to identify leaders. Untold amounts of goodness that comes out of this, but corporate leaders who include those that have military experience among the, call it Fortune 1000, the Wall Street Journal tells us, are less than 2.5% now. So turn that around. If I'm a veteran coming out interviewing for a role at a certain level in an organization, there's a 97%+ chance the person sitting across the table from me has no idea who I am, what I've done, what I can do as an individual, what I have to offer the real world. And that's the bridge that we need to cross. And so there's training, yes, on the veteran side. They need to meet the organization halfway because the organization, by and large, isn't going to undertake the effort to understand the veteran. But we need to have the corporate entities realize their shortcomings, realize the value in this talent pool, and undertake the education and the training that they need to meet these folks halfway. That's the long and short of it. And you would think, given the value that veterans and military spouses pose to these corporate entities, that there would be far more taking advantage of them. In fact, if we believe what Korn Ferry tells us, only 80%, I should say 80% of large organizations do not have veteran-specific hiring programs. Even worse, the U.S. Chamber tells us small businesses, now small businesses make up 99% of the businesses in the country are responsible for 42% of the new jobs created every year. 90% of 99% of the businesses in this country do not have veteran-specific hiring programs. So while there's lots of goodness and you see commercials and good on them for the 20% of large organizations that have actually undertaken efforts, and I'll call out and J.P. Morgan Chase, who founded the Veteran Jobs Mission, and full transparency, I sit on their external advisory council for military veteran affairs, a huge proponent of what they're doing. But I believe we need to rapidly and broadly expand that base from the 300 and some odd organizations that are members of it today. We need far more people to get in the boat, understand what this talent pool brings to the table, and understand how to build the programs to actually bring them on. Again, the whole purpose for the book.
You said so much there, and I related in the sense that when I'm doing these interviews or I'm having conversations, oftentimes corporations will look at the term supplier diversity as a trend. And it's amazing to me, we're still educating the value. And you brought in some statistics about the benefits of the, you know, veteran workers and being a part of the team, but then also involving them in, you know, the supply chain. And there's statistics around, you know, the economic value of a diverse supply chain. And there's still so many shortcomings of where these organizations are navigating. And I don't know why there isn't more education. Like you said, there are some organizations that are doing it well and are intentional. But I think that this space of DEIB is overwhelming. It is overwhelming because it's such a sensitive subject that there's not enough organizations that are educating the culture of how to onboard, how to be inclusive. And it's so sensitive that, and you can probably relate, if it scares you, if there's fear that you're going to do it wrong, or you're going to say the wrong thing, or you give too much attention to veterans, but then you don't give enough attention to minorities. And then what about the women? And what about the LGBTQ communities and all of these different disadvantage, right? And I feel like on my side that people get scared, right? They don't know how to balance everyone and include everyone. And so then they just don't. Talk about some of those challenges when you finally get the corporation to say, okay, Matt, help us out here. What are we doing wrong? It has to become a broader focus of DEIB, which I know your mission is veterans, but does it fall in place with the way their culture is? Where do you see that challenge?
Let me try to unpack that a little bit, because culture is a word that concept that's rife with different angles we could go with it. Let me just answer the DEI component angle first specifically. One, my point of view is it shouldn't be a challenge. It is an expectation that your organization's stakeholders, and to the extent that you're a public entity, your shareholders have. And to your point, and I'm unable to quote specific figures in this instance, because again, I'm not focused as immediately on the broader DEI community here, but suffice it to say that to the extent I've touched on it via my veteran efforts, there is incredible value in diversity of individuals that are brought to the table, diversity of thought, diversity, all of those different perspectives lend at the end of the day to an optimal outcome in whatever decision is being made in an entity. So I'll leave that at that. From a veteran angle, I've got to call this out, because I think it is a way that organizations can preserve the goodness that they expect to realize through their DEI efforts, which is, and we're recording this November of 2023, some may recall from the past summer, a Supreme Court decision about affirmative action in admissions environments. Because of that ruling, which struck down affirmative actions and admissions decisions, the next domino to fall will be corporate DEI efforts. And in fact, there are legal efforts afoot to target those entities as we speak. What I would, and full transparency, I'm not an attorney here, and I'm not trying to advise anyone as such. What I would submit, however, are that veterans, as an example of a protected work class in an organization, and in my view, fully part of that DEI program that should be part of any organization's human talent pool, if veterans are put in at the heart of those DEI efforts and put in charge of various aspects of it, it will insulate you from the legal threats that are coming if they haven't already arrived. So there's an upside for you in terms of a way to preserve the goodness that hopefully you're realizing through your efforts today.
When you talk about affirmative action, are you and your company, either independently or with PurePost, advocating? Are there legislations, different things that you guys are trying to bring to the forefront that will implement more of a process with veterans on onboarding? Is there something else legislatively that can happen with corporations to either make them, I don't know if there's responsibility, advocacy, requirements? Veterans are outside of affirmative action, but is there some things legislatively that can be done to help support the efforts for veterans?
Yes, and I'll go broader than legislatively. I'll call it governmentally. There are efforts that I'm personally undertaking. I'll put my Lewis Advisors hat back on to encourage the defense industrial complex, more specifically, combination of Department of Defense, Department of Labor, Veteran Administration, those that create veterans and those charged with supporting veterans after they leave the military, to better prepare veterans and members of the military community as they leave the military. So let me call out an analogy to give you a sense of what goes on today and my view on how that needs to change. Pardon the metaphor, but if I'm the CEO of the Pentagon and I have limited capital to allocate every year, which I do, is it going to go to beans, bullets, mission, fight and win the nation's wars, or is it going to go to helping people successfully matriculate from my organization, right? And that answer, which is obvious, will always be the case. So the outcome of that is veterans and military spouses will ultimately, inevitably be shortchanged on their way out the door. Now, things are markedly better today than they were, you know, when I left active duty back in the mid-90s, but it's still woefully short of where things need to be. That in totality is short-term thinking and leads to unemployment, underemployment, which is the larger issue, which has links to the suicidality that we see in the post-9/11 cohort and is responsible for the many statistics that are out there whereby veterans tend to retain their first job around a year and they job hop and job hop and job hop, so much so that by their sixth post-military role, half of them are still not in their preferred career field. It doesn't do them any benefit. It doesn't do their family any benefit. It doesn't do their prospective employers in any benefit. Everybody loses with that sort of a model. And it's short-term thinking on behalf of DOD, DOL, and the VA. If they thought down board a bit and understood the ramifications, they would see that it not only impacts suicidality, it ultimately impacts the recruiting issues that we see today. And those that have been paying attention over the last several months realize that there is a national security crisis afoot because of a lack of recruiting. Every single service, save the Marine Corps, have missed their recruiting goals. Within the past year, the Army, the largest service, 2 years in a row, so much so that the Army has had to physically reduce its force. Now, I've submitted an essay to the Modern War Institute at West Point on this topic. They had a call for essays to address the recruiting crises. And I put forth all sorts of suggested remedies, both pre-separation and post-separation, to enable the full employment optimal career fields of our mill spouses and veterans to take place. You know, put yourself in the shoes of a 16, 17-year-old. Besides the opportunity to go and shoot weapons and blow things up, which might be
travel. Yeah.
Travel might be a kid's dream at that age. If they're wise enough to look downboard, what's the end game here? And if they see the current members leaving the military being unemployed, underemployed, you know, the 22, 43, pick your number a day, killing themselves, why would they join? Because that's the picture, that's the real picture that they see today. So that's a long-winded answer to your question. Hopefully I addressed it.
No, and I'm glad that you answered that way. You know, I don't know a person who doesn't have family in the military or have retired. I have a niece and a nephew that's several nephews that are in their 20s right now. One's 23 and he served 5 years as soon as he got out of high school, and he's having problems with PTSD and finding his way. So he might be someone I refer to you. And one of the notes that I had mentioned here while you were talking was these other resources outside of job training. And you mentioned the suicide. I've been walking for the American Foundation Suicide Awareness for 10 years, losing a friend. And you come down to the waterfront and they have all of the military boots. And it's the message is you don't know what someone's gone through until you walk a mile in their shoes. And even last night on the nightly news, they were talking about Miss Carter and her initiative for mental health. And where are the resources after they're out? It's not just about the job training, but talk a little bit about some of these other mental health services. And is there a piece of what you're doing advocating for these other things that veterans need outside of just job skills and job placement?
Sure. again, I'm squarely focused on the employment conundrum because in my view, it's a bit of a silver bullet in that if you get a vet fully employed in an optimal career field, it has all of the benefits that I talked about. It also offsets the other aspects, social determinants of social need, I think is the term. I'm probably screwing that up. But it offsets the other issues that tend to come with lack of employment. And so that's point one. Point two would be, while I am focused on employment, I'm a huge proponent of entities that I call veteran collaboratives. Think of these as a single belly button within, it tends to be larger communities around the country that provide wraparound services for veterans. Yes, employment, but whatever other need that they have, if they need housing, if they need healthcare, if they need, you name it, the list goes on, financing, et cetera. They work with others in the community to bring those services and provide them in a point, time, place that the service member and their family need them when they settle in the local community. And I've sat on the boards of several of those. You'll find a long list, 70 some odd of them on my website. So service members, military spouses, as you're looking to transition, please check if those reside in a community you're looking to settle in. They should be one of your primary resources that you reach out to before you even depart, so that they can line up whatever services you need for you as you enter into the community. Service members will be familiar with the term one-stop, a support mechanism that resides on any military installation where you could go and have whatever your issue was resolved or addressed in some way, shape, or form. These collaboratives act as that one-stop entity in your local community to the extent that they exist. You asked earlier about legislation. That is one area in past years where I've been an advocate trying to get legislation and funding in place to more rapidly expand and scale this veteran collaborative concept. That effort succeeded to some degree, but there's still a long ways to go.
I like that, you know, still a long way to go. We use that term often, and one stop is, you know, familiar with people in the business world. So I want to shift gears a little bit because I want to lighten our conversation. I think that what you're doing is so important, and there just aren't enough of us advocating and educating corporates on doing good business. You mentioned the B Corp. There's an organization in Kentucky called Canopy. And as small as Go-To Girl is, it was, you know, working towards kind of a B Corp, doing good and being good in business. And so I recently got that certification and the mission around just being good. I want to talk about the goodness and just share kind of a case study of what does that success look like? You get your corporate on file and you can put metrics and stuff together about, you know, the results of how many you've placed or statistics around that mission. But tell us what a win looks like. Like if you can think about your best case scenario or share a story about a family or the organization, just your happiest thought when you think about the work that you're doing right now.
There's a couple I'll call to mind. One from my Lewis Advisors work and everything with mission transition. And I'll call out another one with my PurePost efforts that is a little more recent. So, and you can read about this. This story's documented on my website as well. I won't mention her name, but someone that had left the military and had struggled a bit finding her way, her purpose, came across my book, specifically Mission Transition. Read the book, began applying it to her life, and kind of restructured her way forward after understanding through the exercises in the book kind of where her true north was, where her personal passion lied, and where those skills, those competencies fit in the real world. And she pivoted to a role working for the White House and has been there for 4 or 5 years now. And, you know, I'll refer you to her comments. She credits the book and, you know, what I put in there with enabling her to do just that. And, you know, she hasn't been happier in her life. So kudos to her. And I wish the same for everyone getting out of the military. I'd love to get the book into the hands of every single service member. But that's one happy story there. One I'll point to with the PurePost work, I mentioned I serve on the boards of a number of nonprofits. One of those is an entity called Soldiers to Sidelines that helps service members to the extent that they seek to become educators or coaches to get certified in doing so. And one of the individuals that was on staff at Soldiers to Sidelines, he was Iraq, Afghanistan vet, was a combat army medic, and had a little mild PTSD, a little problems focusing, and trouble trying to translate what he'd done and put that in some sort of form, call it a resume, that the rest of the world would understand to help him find his optimal landing spot in the real world. I turned him to what we do with at PurePost with a passport and walked him through the steps for completing one. He completed one and used it as his application for graduate school and successfully got into the school that he wanted to. It was kind of a reach school, if you will. And he's in, he started class and is looking forward to completing his degree and going on to marvelous things in the real world. And again, you know, not putting words into his mouth, he credits the passport and what we've done at PurePost to enable him to do that. So there's a couple stories for you.
I know when I network with other women business owners, we approach business differently than men sometimes often, but you can get discouraged sometimes because of the business sense of what you have to do and outsourcing and, you know, putting everything in place. So I want you to take off your business hat for just a few minutes. We're approaching our time to tell us about what does Matt like. And I cannot ever take off my business hat because it's always personal. So I'm just speaking from a woman perspective. Where is your passion? What do you like to do for fun? Tell us a little bit about Matt now. If you want to share a little bit about your life or where you're located and kind of some other things. And I know, you know, my world kind of gets bundled together. It's like I'm a mom, I'm a this. And then people are like, well, what does Vanessa like to do? And it's like, oh, no one's ever asked me that before because your entity becomes your business. So I always like to just take that moment of something you would like to share that's not on a website or just so we know who Matt is from a personal perspective, if you don't mind to share.
Well, I'll start with the fact I'm a husband and a father. My wife's a physician, so I'm familiar with women's point of view and different approaches to business. We have discussions all the time about that. My kids, my oldest is a sophomore at West Point. So as a veteran and a father, that I kind of think differing ways about that. I'm obviously very proud of him and what he's chosen to do. But as a parent, I'm also having experienced the life he's about to graduate into, fearful of what he could potentially experience. And I have twin boys that are still in high school and involved in sports and extracurriculars and doing very well. You talk about, you know, what's my pride and joy. I mean, what do I do in my off time? I you know, anything involving my family, kind of quite insular that way. It's the short answer. In terms of hobbies, while I've kind of given them up since initiated the PurePost business as a way to motivate myself into fine wines and baseball cards, which is kind of an odd kiddish thing, but it's something I've kept up ever since I was a kid. It's just a fun little hobby I have.
See, that's something that we don't get to read or nothing we post about. Well, Matt, I thank you so much for sharing all these words of wisdom and just the mission. And I want you to share it with the audience. It will also be in the footnotes of the episode. But your last words, how they can get involved, how people can make a difference, and where can they find you?
Yeah, sure. So we mentioned my books at the top, Mission Transition for Veterans, Military Spouses, Hiring Veterans for Any Entity That Desires to Do So. Entities, if you're not part of the Veteran Jobs Mission, please become part of the Veteran Jobs Mission. Get on board, get educated, do what you need to do to meet these, not just heroes, but additive members of your workforce halfway. They will improve your culture. They will improve your productivity. They will improve your competitiveness. It's nothing but upside for you. everyone should reach out and check out my website, MatthewJLewis.com, and tons of free stuff out there for you. You can reach me directly. Contact information is on the website. Would love to engage with you either as an individual that needs some help or an organization needing some help putting a program in place. I aim to be a resource and to be value additive in doing so. So please reach out.
And when we say Matthew Lewis, it's L-O-U-I-S.
Yes, Lewis as in St. Louis, as I like to say.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom with us today. And we will have our episode out shortly. Thank you so much.
Thanks again, Vanessa.
Thanks for listening to Navigating Supplier Diversity. GoToGirl is a business development firm that works exclusively with diverse business owners, including women, minorities, veterans, and LGBTQ+ business owners. We help them get through the paperwork that's necessary for certification to get access to public and private opportunities to grow their business. We're also working with corporations to develop and establish their supplier diversity programs with a little more transparency. That's what this podcast is all about, how to do business and how to get business. Thanks for listening and have a blessed day.